I've been busy with covenants before we left, and I'd gone through a number of covenants, and by now you would start to see a trend that's growing. And the trend is generally that God chooses a people, and then out of that people, he would call them to do specific things, and he would set them up for success. In other words, is I'm going to tell you what to do, I'm going to tell you how to live, I'm going to tell you the things that are important to me, and as you start to live in that, blessing will follow. And initially, what we see is that blessing does, but it doesn't last long, because in the flesh and the things that we do, it becomes harder and harder to maintain it. And so what you see is this decline start to set in, and they start to struggle and struggle and struggle and struggle until eventually they break covenant. And in the breaking of covenant, God sets up a new one. And each one is better than the past, because God's plan B is always his better plan. Okay. And so you see how he has the Garden of Eden, and it breaks, and then you see right through to the new covenant, the better solution than even that which he originally created. And so we see that with the covenants. We see this covenant being set up, the covenant breaks, and then a new covenant set up. And so today is one of those. So remember the last covenant we went through was the Mosaic covenant. And it's the covenant that God makes with Moses, and he takes them out of Egypt. And I think the last time I'd said something about Abraham that led the people out of Egypt, and everyone looked at me kind of oddly, and then only afterwards somebody had the courage to say, Mark, by the way, it wasn't Abraham who led them out of Egypt. And I think you know what I meant in the whole thing. But we have Moses leading them out of Egypt and into the desert. And then we're now going to get to the place where they are at the end of that period, and we're going to go into what we call the Palestinian covenant. So the Palestinian covenant was made at the end of 40 years in the desert, just before they enter into the promised land. So they're getting ready to go into the promised land. Often this covenant is not recognized as a covenant all on its own. In other words, is that there's a feeling of, no, it's actually the tail end of the Mosaic covenant and should be included in one. And often I would even understand where that comes from. For me, there's something that sets it apart, and it's around Deuteronomy chapter 29. You don't need to turn there, but let me read 29:1 for you. It said, these are the terms of the covenant the Lord commanded Moses to make with the Israelites while they were in the land of Moab. In addition to the covenant he had made with them at Mount Sinai. And it's that in addition to that leads me to say, actually, I believe this is a different covenant, a covenant that he's making in terms of what we would call the Palestinian. They have laws for the land, and remember that, sorry, let me back up before I go there, is you would remember that they come into, or they come out of Egypt, and as they come out of Egypt, there's a nation now that God's wanting to take into the promised land, but this very group now starts to falter, and they go through that whole doubt thing, and you remember the Joshua and Caleb story, we're going to come back to that. And the second generation, that generation has to die out. The next generation is the generation that's allowed to go in. They're a generation who don't have a slave mentality, in other words, that they had in Egypt. They also are a generation now that have left all of the challenges that they had in the desert and now getting ready to go into the promised land. And so what God gives them now is laws on how they should deal with the land. In other words, I'm going to take you into the promised land. Here are some specific things on how you deal with the land, and what you need to do there. And that's where this covenant comes in. In this covenant, the moral and the civil laws are repeated out of Deuteronomy. So in other words, we see a repeat of them, and therefore it is often called the second law. So when the Jews will refer to this very often as the second law, in other words, it's a repeat of the stuff that comes out of it. Numbers chapter 14, and you may want to turn there quickly. Actually, don't, because you're already at Deuteronomy 28. Sorry, stay there. But let me read Numbers 14, verse 13. It says, because your men explored the land for 40 days, you must wander the wilderness. You must wander the wilderness for 40 years, a year for each day, suffering the consequences for your sins. And so you'd remember the story is that God brings them out, says to them, I want you to go into the promised land and I want you to look. His commandment when he sends them into the promised land to have a look is not to assess whether they should go or shouldn't. God has instructed them to go into the promised land. His instruction is to go and spy on the land so that you know how to go into the land and to take it. But instead what they do is they change the mission of God and they go into the land and start to assess as to whether they should go or shouldn't. And that change of purpose is the very thing that causes them to wander for another 40 years. There's a frightening part in that Numbers verse 14. And it says, now you will find out what it is like to be the enemy of God. Now you will find out what it is like to be the enemy of God. Corinthians raises that issue again. And it says, you cannot now be grumbling like they did in the desert. You need to get back on mission with God and make sure that you're living and fulfilling the call and the mission that God has for your life. And I want to say, friends, for us, this is a huge life lesson. As we start to look at this covenant, we start to realize these were the people chosen of God, meant to go into the promised land, and they don't. They hold back. And they change the mission of go and spy on the land and find out how to take it to should we take it or shouldn't we? And that thing causes them to stumble and causes them to be there for 40 years. The word land is used approximately 180 times in the book of Deuteronomy with explicit instructions on how to live in this promised land. Let's turn Deuteronomy chapter 28. And this is the part you want to get to. All righty. You got it. Now, your translation may read slightly differently to mine, but stick with me. If you fully obey the Lord your God and carefully keep all his commandments that I'm giving you today, the Lord your God will set you high above the nations of the world. You will experience all these blessings if you obey the Lord your God. Your towns and your fields will be blessed. Your children and your crops will be blessed. The offspring of your herds and flocks will be blessed. Your fruit baskets and breadboards will be blessed. Wherever you go and whatever you do, you will be blessed. The Lord will conquer your enemies when they attack you. They will attack you from one direction, but they will scatter from you in seven. The Lord will guarantee a blessing on everything you do and will fill your storehouses with grain. The Lord your God will bless you in the land he is giving you. And if you obey the commands of the Lord your God and walk in his ways, the Lord will establish you as his holy people, as he swore he would do. Then all the nations of the world will see that you are a people claimed by the Lord, and they will stand in awe of you, and the Lord will give you prosperity in the land he swore to your ancestors to give you, blessing you with many children, numerous livestock, and abundant crops. The Lord will send rain at the proper time from his rich treasury in the heavens and will bless all the work you do. You will lend to many nations, but you will never need to borrow from them. If you listen to these commands of the Lord your God that I'm giving you today, and if you will carefully obey them, the Lord will make you the head and not the tail, and you will always be on top and never at the bottom. You must not turn away from any of the commands I'm giving you today, nor follow after other gods and worship them. And so we watch God giving them this incredible, incredible blessing. Now, there are also 14 curses that follow on from that. And I want to come back and chat a little about the whole concept of blessing and cursing in a little while. But here we see some very specific things. The first one we see is that you'll be blessed in the city, you'll be blessed in the field, you'll be blessed with fruitfulness, you'll be blessed with daily provision, you'll be blessed with daily activities, you'll have victory over the enemy, your storehouses will be blessed, your labor will be blessed, seasonal rains will be a blessing, national position will be a blessing, and commerce will be a blessing. For us, we forget those promises all too easily. For us, we are very easy to live under the curse. In other words, is that we start to think that God is angry with us, that things are not going the right way because God is angry and God doesn't bless, and we start to see the things that are under the curse rather than the things that are under the blessing. Much of this was fulfilled in the time of David and Solomon. And we watched how that they lived under the blessing and under the fulfillment of this very, very covenant. Those 14 curses which we see coming to play, and often as you read through the book of Judges, you'll see the curses that came on the book of Judges because of the things that they failed to do that came out of the Palestinian covenant, if you read in Deuteronomy. I want to say to you that the beauty that we see when Jesus comes in the new covenant, we read in Hebrews, is that he becomes the fulfillment of the blessing. In other words, is that the blessing is purchased out of every covenant and fulfilled into the new covenant. And the curse is the curse that is laid on him that you can never fulfill. You and I can never overcome, have victory, and fulfill the curse that is given in each of the covenants. And I want to say in exactly the same way here. For us, we have to understand that the fulfillment of the curse was in him and him alone. It was Jesus who took it on the cross, and he fulfilled the curse so that we could live in the blessing. Most specific condition about this covenant was the keeping of the seventh year and the Jubilee Sabbath rest. And so when you see Jesus coming back, before I go there, what they're saying is, in this covenant, is every seventh year has to be a year where you allow the ground to rest, and then every 50th year is that you return slaves to their rightful owners. In other words, there is a pressing of the reset button on the whole economy, and the whole economy is meant to revert back and start all over again. That was the challenge that they faced, and they never actually got victory in that area and never walked in it. And the problem started when they didn't fulfill that, and we're going to see that in just a little while. But this thing here of the seventh year and the Jubilee year, we see when Jesus comes back, and you remember he goes into the temple, and what does he do? He takes the scroll and he opens the scroll. And he says, who can remember? No? God has called me to fulfill this, And now the Jubilee year has come. And he rolls up the scroll and he gives it back. And they're all looking at him, going, well, what does that mean? And he said, now this thing is fulfilled in your hearing. In other words, this, the resetting of the economy, the resetting of the 50th year, now is fulfilled. In other words, I have come. This covenant that was meant to have been kept, where every seventh year you took a year off, and I was going to provide for you in the 6 years, so that the seventh year you didn't have to farm, and you could let the land rest. And then every 50th year, where the economy was going to be reset, the whole of not only national economy, but the way that we deal with people was going to be reset. I've now come to fulfill. And so Jesus, in so many ways, becomes the fulfillment of this very covenant. Three parts that they had to fulfill. The first one is they had to keep the Ten Commandments, and we've read that in the Mosaic Covenant, so we know about the Ten Commandments. They had to love God with all of their hearts. We know that because it was the same that was brought through from the Mosaic Covenant, which we had dealt with. And then this thing of resting the land, the 70th year of Jubilee, and being fruitful to provide for the rest of the year. Moses was now told to write the book of the covenant, and it was to be read, especially every seventh year. And this book is the book that was placed in the side of the ark. So you remember when we looked at the video of what the tabernacle looked like, and we got into the holiest of holies, and we saw the the ark of the covenant. We saw the stuff that was in the ark of the covenant, and then we saw that it had a pouch on the side where they would put the book of the covenant in. This is the book of the covenant, is out of the book of Deuteronomy, coming out of the Palestinian covenant, that was to be read every seventh year. There were two sacrifices that they had to have for this covenant. Two sacrifices. The first one is they had to have a body. In other words, is that they had to slaughter an animal, and they had to have a body. And the second is they had to have blood. Does that sound similar to something we do today? Exactly right. That's exactly where we get the breaking of bread from. We see it coming through covenant after covenant, but specifically in this covenant now, we see this thing of the body and the blood. So when they leave and they come into the promised land, what is the first thing that they do when they hit the promised land? They build an altar, they slaughter an animal, they sprinkle the blood on it, and they sacrifice the body of the animal. And again, pointing something that they don't really understand. In other words, why is it that we need to have this blood sprinkled and we need to have the body sacrificed there? Pointing at something that's to come into the future. So for them, this is an unfulfilled story that they will only understand once they get to heaven. For us, we look back and see the fulfillment of what we have today and the beauty of what we walk in. In this thing, Eleazar arises as the high priest after Aaron, and the Levites start to teach the people as they stand on the mount of blessing and cursing. There's an interesting change that comes in this covenant. And this is the point that I'm wanting you to grab today. There's an interesting change that comes in this. Because until now, what we've seen is a preparation for the tabernacle that was busy happening. And everything is pointing towards the tabernacle. Now, as they go into the promised land, there's a very, very significant change. That significant change is that the land becomes the sanctuary of the covenant. One of the things that we see is that they write the words on plastered stone. We see that they have an atoning sacrifice on the altar, and it's dedicating the land by the blood of the atonement. In other words, for the first time, this thing is about a land. It's not just about a place in specific. The ark stood between the Mount of Blessing, which was Mount Gerizim, and the Mount of Cursing, which is Mount Ebal. And Eleazar and the Levites stood in their places relative to the ark. I want to come back, and some of you would have said, what on earth is he talking about? And I'm going to come back there in a second, so hang in there when I do. Palestine was spoken of as the land of promise, the pleasant land, the glory of all lands, Emmanuel's land, the land of rest, and the sanctuary land of the Lord. And the seal of this covenant was around that Sabbath rest. In other words, the Sabbath day was the seal of the Mosaic covenant. The Sabbath year becomes the seal of this covenant. And the other one is the early and latter rains. And for us, we quote that all too easily when we quote out of Joel, where it speaks about the early and the latter rains. The early and the latter rains, they did not understand, was referring to that which we would enjoy. In other words, is that there would be an outpouring of the Holy Spirit. That is shown here in the Palestinian covenant, is that part of the blessing of God that would come would be there. They continuously failed to keep these conditions, and in 721 BC, we know the whole story. The Assyrians take the northern kingdom of Israel and take them captive, and they never return as a nation after that. The southern kingdom is taken in 606 BC, and they're allowed to return 70 years later, and you know the whole story of Nehemiah rebuilding the wall, and they come back and start to rebuild on that one. And God raises a nation out of that, which we know as the nation of Israel today. God helped them in the land to prepare for the Messiah and the establishing of the new covenant. The focal point changed from a promised land to a promised person. And it's also interesting to know how much language is used around the church and the early and the latter rains of what's busy happening there. So, let me start to wrap up, and out of all of this myriad of information that I just dumped on you, let's start to pull it together in some so whats. Because for me, I'm always saying, so what? If I read the Palestinian covenant, so what? Who cares? Here are the three things that I come up with out of this covenant. This is not about a land, but about a person. This is not about a land, but about a person. Now I want to tell you, and I'm going to speak about it in a little while, is that Israel is an incredibly, incredibly special place. I just spent some time with my boy, and he's just come back from 2 weeks in Israel, and absolutely loved it. Absolutely loved it. Just speaks with such passion. A highlight for him was going to sit in the empty tomb where Jesus' body was laid. And he starts to tell of the story. And I could just see him moved by the story of being where Jesus was and what that empty tomb is like. There is something incredible about the land. But I want to tell you is that this covenant starts to say it is not so much about a land as it is about a person. And unless you understand and love and have a passion for the person, the land makes very little sense. Makes very little sense. Number two, this is not about a people, but about a person. First of all, this is not about a land, but about a person. And secondly, this is not about a people, this is about a person. And so as much as it is about the church today, as much as it was about the Israelites, as much as it was about Palestinians in the Palestinian covenant, as much as it was about a promised land at the time, I want to tell you that all of it points to a person, and his name is Jesus. And unless we understand that the light of the context is always helping us to understand that there is a person, we start to fail to understand. When we get hung up in, is it going to be a seventh year or the 50th year, or when is life going to be reset, or when does the reset button get, we lose the plot completely unless we understand and are passionate about the person. We have to understand that. And when we grab hold of the person of Jesus and we understand the fulfillment of all covenant is in the person, then we understand the beauty of this thing that God starts to reveal slowly but surely through the covenants of the Old and the New Testament. Number three, this person became the curse so that we could live in the blessing. Now I want to tell you folks, we need to go back to Deuteronomy 28. And we need to read Deuteronomy 28 over and over and over and over and over again until we understand that that's the blessing that God has for us. Because if we're living anything short of the blessing of Deuteronomy 28, we have not grasped the fullness and the love of God. You say, oh, Mark, that sounds like, you know, this great, you know, we go and read it and I'll be blessed and I'll be the head and not the tail. And so I just throw that around and now I live in it. No, no, no. We need to read it so that this thing starts to grasp our hearts. In other words, is that we understand that God, Jesus becomes the very curse so that we don't have to live in the curse. And he becomes the fulfillment of the blessing so that we understand what it is that we're called to live in. When we read Deuteronomy 28, then we start to understand. That's why Jesus died. He became the fullness of the curse so that we could live in Deuteronomy 28. I want to ask which part of the blessing are you struggling with? Are you struggling with blessing in commerce? Are you struggling with blessing in your home? Are you struggling with blessing in your job? Are you struggling with blessing in your marriage? Are you struggling with blessing in your friendships? Are you struggling in blessing or a victory over your enemies? Are you struggling in whatever area it is? I want to encourage you, go back and read Deuteronomy 28 over and over and over again until you start to understand, Jesus became all of this so that I could live in it. How many of you, when you were at school, played kick your granny? None of you. Well, let me complete your education. My goodness me. We've got to complete your education here. So what they would do is, and usually it would be some big bully in the school, you know, he would take two little blokes, and he'd put one over there, and he'd put one over there, and he'd build a mound in front of them and build a mound in front of this one, and he'd say, you see, there's your granny, and there's your granny. Saying, well, now, are you tough? Yes, I am. Are you tough? Yes, I am. Well, good, then kick his granny. He said, I'm not going to kick his granny. Oh, weaky. You're a bit weak, aren't you? No, I'm not. I'm strong. Well, if you're strong, then kick his granny. And so it wouldn't be long until he'd incited some kind of violence until one of the two little weasels had enough courage to walk across and go and kick his granny. And you can imagine that as soon as you kicked his granny, the fight was on and the big bully would stand and watch and the fight had started. He was the hero because he had got the fight going. But I want to tell you that there's a God in heaven and he has a little mound and it's called Jerusalem. And you want to kick his granny, then you walk over and you go and touch Jerusalem. I want to tell you there's something special about that mound. It's a heap of dust. If you've ever been there, and forgive me for talking badly about our God's Jerusalem, But if you've ever been there, it's nothing much to talk about. It's a heap of dust. It's a mound of absolute dust. But it's his special place. It's his special place. And forevermore, he tells us to pray for the peace of Jerusalem. And till this day, pray for the peace of Jerusalem. Because I want to tell you, when the peace of Jerusalem stops, all hell will break loose. Because you kicked his granny. But you know what? The whole story is not about the mound called Jerusalem. It's about the one who will come back and stand with his feet in Jerusalem. His name is called Jesus. And it's him who will come back and will stand in that city on God's little mound of dust called Jerusalem. It's him who became the fulfillment of the curse, who becomes the fulfillment of the blessing, who becomes the one in whom we live and move and have our being and understand that this is our very purpose for existence. And it influences and affects everything. It affects our marriage. It affects our jobs. It affects the way we think. It affects the way we speak. It affects our motivations. It affects our dreams. And it affects our hopes. And if it doesn't, we haven't understood him. We've tried to understand it. And I want to encourage you today is that we love and appreciate and enjoy him. I want to ask for the worship team to come up. You did a song this morning, Praise the Name. I want you to do it again for us as you lead us. Let's bow our heads.